This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
But don't do that because the phones don't work. But you can email us, garden@wesb.com, and we'll be on Facebook Live here momentarily as soon as I get the camera to work. So, Bob, the Master Gardener, you have like a whole thing that you brought in today.
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous.
Oh.
So we'll get to this in a little bit, I suppose. Your show will tell for the webcam. So that's facebook.com/WESB1075.
I want to start with about a month ago, I talked about it's probably going to be what we call an oak mast season. That's where the oak tree produces an overabundance of acorns. Well, I got to correct myself because it's not going to be.
Oh.
It's very hard to predict. And at first I thought it would because we had a mild winter and we haven't had a mast abundance of acorns for a few years. So I thought this year would be, and so did some other people. But it's not. I've inspected quite a few oaks. There's really hardly any acorns out there. And, you know, that affects the whole forest. What does that mean?
Thumbs up. I got the thing working.
Oh, okay.
You got to learn my sign language,
I guess,
Bob.
So. The oak kind of controls the whole forest. When it produces a big crop, we call it mast, all the animals in the forest eat well. And when they eat well, that means they produce more young. And so everything is good in the forest. Now, and an oak tree doesn't do a big crop every year. It's only every 3 to 5 years around that. No one really can say exactly when it's going to be. So an abundance of animals out there because of the abundance of the acorn. And when it's not a mass crop, then the population starts to drop, of course, because starvation and so on, and because of overpopulation. The oak kind of controls the whole forest system in that way. I'll explain it a little bit further. When there is a mass crop, a lot of deer can feed very well. And of course, then their population grows. And the coyotes see that their population is growing. So that means more food for them. So that their population grows. And of course, the coyotes keep the deer population down, the rabbits, the mice, all those animals, their population down, until it reaches a point where there's not a lot of deer or other rodents for the coyotes to eat. So the coyote population starts going down. And then the oak trees produce a mass crop again, and the whole system starts over. So it kind of controls the whole forest system. I think it's quite interesting, and no one can really say when they're going to produce that crop, when they're not. Usually it's after a good mild winter, but this year, no.
We had a mild winter.
We did.
So they decided not to do it.
They decided not to do it. It takes the oak tree so much energy to produce all those acorns that then they have to rest for a few years.
I was reading that they could drop up to 10,000 acorns.
Yeah.
Wow.
Indeed.
Woo-hoo. Yeah. In just 1 year. In the last
year. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, there is a lot of speculation that man grew up around the oak tree. I think I've mentioned this before. There was archaeologist, anthropologist, trying to make a study of where the populations of man started. And he asked one of his students to show me where all the oak populations started in the world. And so he had these two maps, and he placed them together, and they were exactly the same. So he started saying, well, maybe we better dig into this. Maybe man started underneath the oak tree. And, of course, there is a lot of proof to that all over the world, especially they found a lot of proof of it out around California, where the Native Americans and maybe even peoples before them started. What they would do with acorn's bitter to eat. But if you bury it in a creek, let that water run through it for a year, then all the tannins, which makes it real tart and sour, gets washed out, and then the rest of it is good to eat. And so they find all these caches, and they're able to date them. And they find they are thousands and thousands of years old. And they've also found these great big slabs of stone where there's little divots gouged out. And they're pretty sure that's where the natives would have ground the acorn into a flour so that they could make all kinds of different breads.
How cool is that?
So there is a lot of information out there that man did start and grow up underneath the oak tree, because he's probably just observing all wildlife grew up underneath the oak tree. All life is kind of dependent on it. That's an interesting story.
Yeah. So the mast years can occur every, 2 to 5 years?
3 to 5.
Okay.
Yeah. Every 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Excellent.
Up there it says 2 to 5, huh? Okay. 2 to 5, 3 to 5. Like I said, nobody really knows when they're going to. It's all dependent on the weather. For a few years, they got to build up that strength to be able to produce that big crop.
Very good. All right. Hey, we do have an email.
All right.
Garden@wesb.com. And this is from Kim. And where did it go? There it is. Okay. So Kim she works in the office, and she got a little flowering plant from her boyfriend.
Okay.
She says she's wondering if the flowers will continue to bloom, or if they die off, or do they come back next year? Can you offer any advice? It's just this little...
Oh, right there. Okay. They will only bloom for a period of time, but they will bloom for that period of time every year.
Do you know what this is called?
Kalanchoe, it's called. It's a very neat house plant. I wouldn't plant it outdoors. It's a very nice house plant.
So it is good to keep in the office.
It is good to keep in the office, yes. And it's spectacular blossoms on it. I wish everybody could see it. Well, they probably can, huh? No,
I don't know how to share the screen.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right.
I don't know. I imagine it's possible.
But neat plant called Kalanchoe. Has its own season of blossom, and we'll do that every year for you as long as you take care of it. You know, and that's going to be, that type of plant is a succulent, so it's not going to demand a lot of water. So every time you think about watering it, you know, think twice.
How about if I put it in the comments after we get off the air? Yeah. I'll put it in the comments on our Facebook post, and then they can check out the plant there. But, yeah, so that's a plant. It's not going to die out. It's not a flower. It's a plant.
It's a plant, yep.
And,
plant that flowers.
But it's gonna stay alive?
Yep, going to stay alive, given the correct care.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully there was a tag with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if there isn't, then you can just look up that Kalanchoe and find out all the information you need to keep it going, keep it growing, keep it flowering. And it's, like I say, a great house plant.
So did you say that they flower just once a year?
Yeah, just once a year.
Okay. And for how long?
Oh, gosh, it'll be weeks. Yeah, it'll flower for weeks.
Okay. Just weeks?
Yeah.
Just okay. Weeks. All right.
It might last upwards close to a month.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, great, great house or office plant.
And does it get bigger? Should she put it in a bigger pot?
Eventually, yeah.
Okay.
But a lot of those succulents and cactuses kind of like to be root-bound. That does help them. So I wouldn't be real quick to repot it.
Okay.
I'd wait a year, maybe 2 years. When it starts to struggle a little bit, then think about repotting it.
Excellent. Well, thanks for the advice there, and thanks for Kim writing in. And enjoy your office plant.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Good one.
All righty. So let's take a short break.
Okay.
And then we can come back and talk about
yes.
what you brought in Excellent. We'll thank our sponsor, Worth W. Smith, and we will be back with more Gardening Show right here on B107.5 FM.
At Worth W. Smith Company, you'll find what you need when it comes to shovels, rakes, pruners, and all sorts of other gardening and landscaping tools. Why take the chance of getting splinters from old dried-up cracked handles or the frustration of fighting with the rusty chipped cutting edge on your loppers? Their staff is always eager to lend a helping hand with getting you what you need for the project ahead. Stop and see them today at any of their 6 locations in Bradford, Olean, Salamanca, Cuba, and Eldred. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company.
It's the Gardening Show on B107.5 FM, facebook.com/WESB107.5 as well. You can comment your question there, or you could send an email, garden@WESB.com. And go ahead, Bob. What else do you have for us today?
I want to talk about digging and dividing perennials. Now, I brought in some perennials, and I'm going to try to demonstrate on one perennial here on how you divide it to make more plants. And there are a lot of perennials that you can do this to. I'll name a few here. Hosta, daylily, black-eyed Susan, iris, coreopsis, coral bells, catmint, yarrow, sedum. All those perennials you can dig and divide every so many years when they start to get pretty large, or you can just leave them also and just let them get bigger in their spot. So I want to get up and show this.
All right. So you brought in first.
Yeah. Instead of digging, I've brought in a potted plant and I'm going to be using a big knife.
You don't have
to use a knife.
If I didn't know you better, I'd be nervous.
Oh,
but
yeah, you can just use your shovel. It helps if it's a little bit sharp.
He brings in this big butcher knife.
Yeah. That's my dividing knife.
Kitchen knife here. Okay.
So I'm going to take that out of the pot, and I'm going to go into the middle of the plant. And, you can kind of separate the foliage. You're going to damage some foliage, and it'll look a little rough for a little while. But don't worry, it'll be fine in the long run. Matter of fact, it may be even better off. So I got my knife upside down. Don't do that. So I'm going to go right in the center, and with my knife, I'm going to start to cut right down.
Boy, that looks just like a cake.
Yeah.
Cutting a cake for a birthday party here.
And it's pretty hard, so you may want to have a nice sharp knife. But, like I said, a shovel works. A tree saw works great. Sometimes I've used a tree saw, especially in the ornamental grasses. Their roots are real, real tough, so they don't split real easy.
So this is just a tall grass, ornamental grass, right?
This is a daylily.
Oh, that's a daylily.
It's a daylily.
Because that looks like the... right now, the way it looks like the
looks like a grass because it has no flowers. Yeah, so I'm having a rough time with this,
but you probably will. No, you got it.
Finally, it is.
Yeah,
and
so you got it right in half, divided right down the middle.
So now I have two daylilies. You can clean out some of the foliage that got damaged from the dividing, and now that's ready to replant.
Wow!
And of course, that'll fill in quickly, and a lot of times. It's highly beneficial to the plant to do this. This particular plant, I could even cut it again, each half in half, and end up with 4 plants rather than 1. So you can multiply your perennials quite quickly that way.
Wow. So now, would they grow slower the smaller that you divide them, though?
No, they'll still grow at the same speed. They won't end up as big, but they still will take very easily and start growing immediately and become a new plant again for you. And sometimes it's recommended that you do that, especially if a flower bed or an area is getting a little bit crowded.
So now, with a daylily...
Yes.
When you divide it in half, how long does it take for that half to grow back to the original size?
Oh, a couple, 3, 4, 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all, really. But it doing this hasn't damaged it to the point where it won't flower next year, because it will flower again next year. So it really doesn't damage the plant a great deal, and in most cases, it benefits the plant.
Cool. So that's the daylily.
So that's just the daylily.
Cut it right in half. Split it right down the middle.
Yep.
And if you have a sharp shovel, you could probably just do that while it's still on the ground.
Right in the ground, yeah.
Put it right in there and step on it and split it right in half. And it won't hurt the thing a bit.
Another one, now I'm not going to divide this because mm-hmm. this is a young plant. This is called Monarda or Bee Balm or Oswego Tea. That's a great perennial that is one of the ones that once it starts growing and starts to multiply, can be dug and divided, or divided and then dug.
Sure.
Either way.
Yeah.
And make new plants. Now, this one here really prefers a little bit of shade. I wouldn't plant this in the full sun like I would a daylily. Although daylilies can withstand a little shade too. Instead of getting a dozen blossoms, you only may get a half a dozen blossoms. But they're still well worth it. But this one here is going to enjoy kind of a damp location, cool location, so a shady location.
And that's called the Bee Balm?
Bee Balm, or Monarda.
Monarda.
Or Oswego Tea.
And do they come in different colors, or is that it?
They come in different colors, yeah.
The one that you have here is like a purple.
Purple, yeah.
Blossom.
You can get them in pink, you can get them in white. And they're highly scented. It's in the mint family, so even the foliage is kind of scented. And it can help deter animals because of that minty smell.
Mm-hmm.
That throws a lot of the animals off, like the deer and the rabbits, and even a lot of insects. So it can be a good plant in that way, too.
Wow, what about skunks? I wonder about skunks. What about mint for skunks?
Yeah, you know, I don't know about mint and skunks. I would assume so, because they hunt with their nose, too. So I would assume that a mint would throw them off.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That'd be worth a try, that's for sure.
Because I'm tired of trapping them.
Oh.
It's kind of a nuisance. It's more of a nuisance to get rid of them. It's a
It's
nail biter. Like, all right, is today going to be the day that I get sprayed for the first time?
Yeah.
We got 24 skunks in 1 year, Bob.
Oh, my gosh.
In the neighborhood. It was like 3 years ago, but
that's
still
amazing.
We had like four of them this year. Me and my neighbor
trap them.
A live trap, yeah.
Hey, you're brave guys.
Well, we don't want them around the neighborhood.
Yeah, true. So the last one I have here, this is called coral bells, most commonly. It's called heuchera also, but coral bells. And this is a plant that you can grow in the shade or you can grow in the sun, and it's really well known for its foliage color. Now it's going to come in this nice coppery red color, but also comes in a deeper red, even a yellow or green, comes in a lot of different colors. Then it'll throw up nice little tall spike with little pink flowers on it.
Oh, okay.
So it's very nice that way, too.
Right now, it reminds me of, like, the fancy lettuce in salads.
Oh,
you know, like
yeah,
you see
yeah.
Like the purple leaves or whatever.
But
or,
very, or very versatile plant. And this is one, too. After a few years, you can cut and divide it and have more of it. Very versatile plant, though, because it can grow in sun, it can grow in shade, can grow in a lot of rough areas, like the daylily. Daylily can grow just about anywhere, too. So that's another great, great perennial to have. They all have pretty neat names. I forget what this one. This one is Forever Red.
Forever Red.
Yeah.
God. I would say that's more of a rurple. It's a red purple.
Yeah, rurple. Yeah, I like that.
I don't know.
Yep. So that's coral bells.
Coral bells.
Yep. Good, real good perennial.
And all of these are dividable.
Yes.
And won't hurt it one bit.
That's right. And they're real strong growing perennials for the Bradford area. You plant them in good soil and care for them that first year, and then they're good forever. They really, you know, most perennials don't have a lifespan like the annual does. An annual is going to grow for 1 year, and that's it. A lot of these perennials can grow for decades and centuries even.
Wow. That's neat.
Especially the daylily.
Centuries?
Yes, centuries even. Sometimes walking through woods, you may even find a daylily growing there, and it may be 100 years ago there was a homestead there. And that's proof that that was there, that the daylily is still growing there, and maybe some daffodils and maybe an old lilac. All of those are plants that just grow forever, never die off, that don't really have a lifespan.
Are those native to this area or not?
No.
So that's when you can tell, because that's how you could tell it was a homestead, because they don't just grow there by accident.
Yeah, they've all those plants have been brought in from other countries, which reminds me, you know, it's all right. It's all right. And maybe even preferable. To me, it is. I know a lot of people push for plant natives only to support the native population. Well, a lot of that native population isn't native either. You know, the honeybee is not a native insect. We're all trying to support that. So by planting not just natives, but imported plants, as long as they're not invasive, that means they won't spread out into our forest and take over, are fine. As a matter of fact, a lot of the pollinators prefer some of these imported plants over the native plants. A lot of these make more pollen, more nectar than our native plants. So you can be doing better by planting some of these. Now, the bee balm is a native.
Okay.
That's a native plant. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the coral bells and the daylily, they are not native to America.
So why do they take to here so well?
Probably because of the place in the world they came from.
And which is where? South America?
No. Or where? No. A lot of them, you know, came from China.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. I'm like, if they came from like the southern hemisphere, or like closer to the equator, how are they doing so well here?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's why, because they come from the same kind of
climate. Well, as you get in the southern hemisphere.
Well, yeah. I know.
And start to get close to Antarctica, you got tough plants again.
Correct.
But a lot of these have come from China and Japan. A lot of them from the mountains in the Sichuan Valley of China, which has real similar growing conditions to us. And matter of fact, it's probably one of the most, there's more plants, kinds of plants there than most places on Earth. Because how it's shaped, it was never destroyed, I don't know if that's the right term, by the glaciers.
Okay.
Because of the mountains there. Yeah. The glaciers were forced around. So in that Sichuan Valley, some of these plants have been able to develop for millions of years.
Wow, neat.
So there's a good variety there, and they grow well here.
Now, you said the honeybees are not native.
No, they're not native.
Where'd they come from?
They came from Italy.
What?
When we first settled in this country, there were bees, but there was no honeybees. And, of course, one of the first crops that we had to grow was the apple, and I'll talk about that in weeks to come. But they weren't producing well, so some of the pioneers imported honeybees from Italy. And then, of course, then they started getting better crops, and, of course, it affected a lot of the food crops. And so the honeybee, is not a native bug, although that's the one we always talk about.
Now, but it's not invasive?
No, it's not.
Or is it invasive in a good way?
Okay. I'll go with that,
Okay.
It's invasive in a good way because it pollinates so many different crops, so many different ones that aren't native to America either, that it helps us to feed ourselves.
All right.
So it's an extremely, extremely important insect. I can't say that enough, along with most anybody else.
I think that's the most surprising thing I've learned from you this season, is that the honeybees are not from here.
Oh.
I just thought they were just everywhere.
Oh, no.
No. Fascinating. All right, well.
Now, the bumblebee is native.
Okay.
And there are a lot of other bees. There are something like 400 or 500 different types of bees in America.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a friend that does a study on them. Boy, I wish I'd love to bring her on the show someday. And she's done a real intense study of it. And she's collected all the different varieties to show how many we have in this area compared to other areas. And very, very knowledgeable on the bee population.
All right. So we're just about out of time. So any closing words for today, Bob, that we didn't get to on your three notepads that you brought
yeah,
in?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the dividing was going to go too quick. So I did mention that dig and divide, a lot of the perennials, hosta, daylily, black-eyed Susan, iris, coreopsis, coral bells, catmint, that's a real popular perennial anymore, yarrow and sedum, and I talked about the oak. It's a very, very interesting story. There is a book, I wish I would have brought it, I could tell you the author, it's called Oak, The Frame of Civilization, a real interesting book if you're into that kind of thing like I am. Also wanted to talk about to do a good thing in your yard. One of the best things you can do is plant a tree. That supports more life than a lot of other plants do. By planting a tree, first thing you're going to notice, it gives the birds some place to land, a roost. And you want to bring birds into your yard. They eat lots and lots of insects. And, of course, that keeps them off you, keeps them off your plants. It does attract bugs, though. The tree does.
So,
which is good for the birds.
You get the birds because you want to get rid of the bugs.
Yeah.
But then now you're going to get more bugs.
But and they did a study on the chickadee. To rear a clutch of a young, that's going to be 4 or 5 young, a chickadee's going to need, I think it's around 5,000. I know the numbers seem odd, but it's true. 5,000 caterpillars for that clutch of young birds.
Wow.
To feed them. Caterpillars have a lot of protein.
Who knew that there are that many caterpillars around?
But the chickadee will find them. They have the eyesight and the ability to find them. So by planting that tree, not only did you attract the caterpillar, but you attracted the predator to the caterpillar to keep the population down to feed more birds so you can attract that, so you can have more birds. But also, the tree is going to give your pets and your kids a little shady spot, real important, especially this year. It's going to help cool your house. Even if it's not right against your house, it's going to cool an area in your yard, and that area can affect your whole yard. And it's going to add beauty and value. A house without a tree is not real desirable when you're out there looking for a house. It helps frame that house. It helps bring nature into the house. So a tree can be extremely important.
Beautify the neighborhood. Plant a tree.
Yes, and it doesn't have to be a big oak or a maple. There's a lot of trees that will never grow over 20 foot tall that are very useful and very decorative and are still a tree.
Well, thank you very much. Great advice, as always, from the Master Gardener, Bob Harris. And hey, we'll be back next week.
Yeah.
All right. It's The Gardening Show right here on B107.5 and on demand at WESB.com. Have a great weekend, Bob.
Thanks.